Hey, nurse leaders, listen in to my conversation with an exceptional nurse executive who is leading innovative solutions to address the staffing challenges at their facility, designed to prevent burnout and promote retention. I was impressed with how she and her team got creative in deploying strategies to retain the nurses who have a wealth of experience and the value they add to the intellectual capital of the organization. She also shares some pearls of wisdom to those who aspire to become nurse leaders and senior nurse executives to be successful in their roles. Stay tuned to learn more. Welcome to the Insightful Nurse Leader. This is a podcast by nurse leaders for nurse leaders. This show is focused on assisting leaders become effective managers and change facilitators. I'm your host, Miles Perilla. Join me every week as I speak with fellow nurse leaders, share insights, lessons learned, and practical advice. So, whether you're a seasoned frontline leader, a budding charge nurse, an experienced manager, or executive, you don't want to miss this. Hello, everyone. Welcome to our 10th episode of the Insightful Nurse Leader. Our guest today is the Senior Vice President of Patient Care Services and Chief Nursing Officer for Phoenix Children's Hospital, one of the nation's largest pediatric healthcare system. She brings a wealth of experience in nursing leadership and a passionate focus on quality care and the patient experience. In her current role, she promotes and develops Phoenix Children's professional RN practice and collaborates with physician leadership and others to drive continuous improvements in clinical services and patient outcomes. She plays an active role in the organization's decision-making structure and strategic planning in order to prepare for the healthcare system's continued growth. Previously, she served as Chief Nursing Officer for the Children's Hospital of San Antonio, where she was also the William H. Perry Endowed Chair of Pediatric Nursing. She also served in nursing leadership roles at Memorial Hermann in Houston, including Director of Pediatric Specialty Care Services and at Texas Children's Hospital. She earned a doctorate in nursing from Rush University, plus a master's degree in nursing and a master's of business administration from the University of Phoenix. Rhonda Thompson, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Miles. Thank you very much. That was a lovely introduction.
Thank you. I am honored to have you in the show and really delighted that you've chosen to be here. So today we're really going to talk about the pressing issues in the nursing profession, the nursing industry. But to start with, can you share a little bit more about your background and your expertise in your role and the creative solutions that you have implemented at Phoenix Children's?
Sure. So, you know, just to expand on my experience, I actually started my nursing career many moons ago, several decades ago, when there was actually no nursing jobs. Can you even fathom that? But there really wasn't. And I tell new nurses that I had to go to the phone book, which they didn't, most of them don't have any idea what that is, and use the yellow pages to apply for jobs. But I started my career in geriatrics and then moved to adults and then to pediatrics, where I've spent the majority of my career, but have somewhat of an eclectic background in adults, inpatient, outpatient. And along the way, I think I've had some great, great mentors that have taught me a lot. And obviously, I've learned a lot about leadership in general and what it takes to be a good leader. So I think I've gotten through my experiences and through those who have mentored me, been able to establish a pretty full toolbox, if you will, of things that I can use to help establish some potential solutions. I certainly am not here to say I have all the solutions, but some potential solutions to the situation and crisis that we are currently in.
Thank you for sharing that. What is your favorite part of being a CNO? What keeps you motivated moving forward? You know, we talk about nursing in general being a difficult time right now, but more so for leaders.
Yeah, it's so true. There probably isn't much harder of a time to be not just a nursing leader, but a healthcare leader right now with the circumstances we're surrounded by. Well, I think what motivates me is I have a very unique opportunity not only to touch and to impact and to advocate for thousands of lives, thousands of patients and families, but also my employees. And when I say my employees, whether they're nurses or not, I feel like I own some of the need to advocate for them. And so that's what gets me up in the morning. It inspires me and it motivates me. And You know, many of us as nurse leaders don't need a lot of recognition. We don't need pats on the back. But when I see nurses in the hallway and they say, thank you for giving me some coffee the other morning. I mean, that just, it's the small gestures. And that's really what motivates me every single day.
Awesome. That's very exciting. So you got featured at Becker's Hospital Review recently in the biggest challenge in the nursing industry this year, 2022. In that article, you mentioned including solutions such as creative staffing models to prevent burnout. Can you talk more about these creative solutions and the impact that they have with your current nursing workforce?
Sure. So I like to think of myself as thinking outside the box, regardless of what the issue is. And so I really inspire my leaders to think outside the box. And so when I first came, I've been at Phoenix Children's for almost 8 months now. And when I first came and we started talking about the impact of the pandemic, and many of us know it had a much different impact on the pediatric population and still has somewhat of a different impact than on the adult population. But we started talking about the burnout and the lack of resilience, if you will, for some of our staff. We also talked about, we've got the great resignation, as they're calling it, and how that was impacting us. And so we started talking about different models. And when you've got nurses that have been in the business for 30 years and have taken great care of patients, and they come to you and say, I'm tired. I don't think I can do 12-hour shifts, or I don't think I can do what I'm doing now. We started planning on, well, what other opportunities can we give them? Because losing that intellectual capital is just such a devastation to an organization. And when you have even as low as 20% in some of our departments of senior nurses, it's huge to lose them. So we looked at options around, well, are we really married? Do we really need to be married to 12-hour shifts? Please don't anybody shoot darts at me, but because I know, you know, when I was a young nurse, it was 8-hour shifts and we moved to the 12-hour shifts. And I think we need to consider that. And then for those folks who may just be tired at the bedside or don't want to do 12-hour shifts, we talked about, well, how do we use their intellectual capital to benefit the next generation? And so we're giving them opportunities like, well, instead of precepting a new nurse on the floor, would you consider coming and doing a didactic course for us, you know, for 4 hours every other day? And so I think we've had a lot of interest in that. We've talked about doing, and we have some folks doing temporary nurse staffing for us. So almost kind of our own little temp staff, if you will, is these are folks who are burned out of having to work full time. They're kind of an in-between. Many of them have finished nurse practitioner or advanced practice provider school. So we hire them on as temporary staffing and they'll do 8 weeks for us. They'll take a break. They'll come back and do 8 weeks in a few months. So those are some of the things that we're really trying to look at. Instead of what works for us as an organization, what works for them? How do we help them stay motivated, engaged, and how do we build their resilience? And it's a lot of, from an operation standpoint, it gets very complicated if you're trying to manage people only want to do 4-hour shifts. But at the end of the day, if it decreases your turnover, especially with those that have so much knowledge and intellectual capital to share, it's worth it. It's worth it every single day.
That's exciting. You know, McKinsey and Company recently did a survey, May last year, regarding staff retention. And obviously the biggest reason why people leave is a staffing challenge, right? And in that published article in May last year, it talked about that there's no silver bullet, really, but there's like different recommendations. And you talked a lot about the being creative with the staffing models and even tapping into the didactic part of it, tapping into the intellectual capital that you have, because at the end of the day, really, it's the staffing mix. Like, you create that safe delivery of care when you have a staffing mix of different levels of experience in nursing. So it's a learning environment, because with a lot of turnover right now, it is difficult to maintain that. So kudos to you for being able to implement that in a creative way. Have you seen an impact in your turnover rates?
Just in general, absolutely. It's not quite doubled since pre-pandemic. We were below national benchmark at Phoenix Children's. If you look back at 2018, 2019, below 15% in turnover, and we are well into the mid to high 20s. So almost doubling it, if not doubling it in some instances. And it's multitude of reasons. And I think I actually just had this conversation with we have a nurse leadership board around what does retention mean? What does turnover mean? And I think for frontline managers, where I see them get very, very frustrated is they get caught up in trying to make an impact on all of the things they can't control, compensation, benefits. And I said to the group yesterday, I said, look, certainly those are important things. And from an executive standpoint, we are absolutely willing to consider anything at this point. And it's on the list. And here are some of the things we're working on from a proposal perspective to our CEO. But what I want you to do is focus on the things that you can control, the environment within your department, the culture, your ability to be resilient, teach your staff resiliency. So turnover is, it's now like our number one priority, like many organizations across the country. And it's interesting. It's not, certainly not Phoenix Children's is standing alone in this environment. Mm-hmm. And you're right. There is no silver bullet. No one has the answer, the answers. It's really, I mean, we're having a special Children's Hospital Association CNO call this week just to talk about this one subject around retention and turnover. And of course, there's so many other things that impacts, and I'm not sure that sometimes people realize how it impacts quality and outcomes when you have high turnover. So it's certainly something that keeps me up at night.
Totally agree. So earlier you mentioned about the most impactful moments in healthcare and the care delivery itself with the staffing. So going back to this study from McKinsey survey, the number one recommendation they had was to make workforce health and well-being part of the fabric. So this is like obviously a big picture thing, which involves like recognition and having resources, mental health resources and such. And you hear this in different organizations where nurses are burnout. A lot of them have a sense of moral injury and such. What is Phoenix Children's doing regarding supporting well-being or mental health for our very crucial staffing in the healthcare industry?
Sure. At the beginning of the pandemic, when we saw, obviously, again, pediatrics was impacted a little bit differently, but we still saw this impact on our nursing staff when they were seeing what was happening within their community. And so we did bring on an EAP person on site, was available Monday through Friday. And actually, in the past 6 months, we brought a second person on because the first person was so busy. And that they're available by appointment, if there's the availability by walk-in as well. We also have a well-being and fitness center, so folks can go and exercise if they'd like, either before or after on their break. There's a meditation room that's available that has four different massage chairs, and they can have the incense that they want or the music that they want playing. So we do have those kind of things. I think the other thing that you mentioned was the appreciation part of somewhat of the mindfulness of the work they do. And many nurses, you're hearing this, are asking, is this worth it? Is all I'm going through worth it? And so we've established, and I like to say we, not I, but we've established in all of our patient experience surveys, every single person that's mentioned in those surveys gets a handwritten thank you card from me. Every single person. It doesn't matter whether it's a nurse or a doctor, child life specialist, the EVS worker. And for those that I have access, I send it to their home address, because I also think it's important that their families see that they're being recognized. And it's not a general thank you card that I just stamp my name on. I use whatever language the family wrote about that person, I use in that thank you. So the Smith family recognized you were so patient with their child or what have you. And I think people sometimes underestimate how a thank you can impact someone's day, someone's week, someone's month. And then we implemented monthly leadership coffee cart rounds in a different department every month. And then quarterly, the senior executives are at the entrance and exit to the hospital, both of them handing out iced coffees or juices, or again, just to say, we hear you, we appreciate you, and thank you for everything that you do.
Wow. Wow. I must say, receiving a personalized card from my boss or my boss's boss, really, I've experienced that. I certainly echo how meaningful that is, that the CNO or the director have taken the time to really even just to as far as sending that letter. And to me, when I received that personalized letter, it was very heartwarming. So thank you for doing that.
Oh, sure. It's my pleasure.
So let's talk about nursing leadership, the career of nursing leaders. We talk about the burnout and the turnover for nurses, but more so for nursing leaders, especially on the mid-level leaders, right? Because you have nursing managers covering a lot of the shifts for frontline nurses. And to a degree, there is a moral injury there because they feel like they've been left behind. This is from my understanding and from what I've heard and talked to some of the nursing leaders or mid-level nursing leaders I have in my network. And a lot of them, actually just last night, I spoke with a nursing leader who opened up to me about feeling undervalued because their nurses are making more than they do and they're working 60 hours or longer. From your perspective, being a CNO, what are you looking for promoting a nurse leader during this tumultuous time in healthcare?
When you say promoting, you mean moving somebody into a nursing leadership role?
Correct.
Well, so I'm looking for someone, this may sound so simplistic, but you know, that we practice what we preach. And so we've spent a great deal of time as leaders talking about the things we just talked about, gratitude, appreciation, wellness, resiliency. We have to have that ourselves in order for us to lead in the right way. And so one of the things I learned when I was first here, I hosted these coffee with the CNO, and I remember one of the managers telling me that she really doesn't take PTO. She's always available. And I said, I have to stop you. I mean, I really appreciate that that's all with good intention, but you are not allowing yourself the time to refresh and be the best you can be for your staff. And so I think it's important that leaders can again, practice what they're teaching or what they're asking of their staff, and to make sure you are taking time for yourself. And I know, again, I'm guilty of it too. I'll be on PTO and someone sends me an email and I answer it. And I will sometimes have to say, no, I'm not going to answer that unless it's an emergency. But I think it's understanding that although we have 24/7 accountability, you've got peers that are more than willing to step in and support you, and you need to take advantage of that time. I think the other thing, Miles, is it's really important that we bring to the table not just the clinical expertise. And I think we've all heard kind of the way that we, years ago, this is how we got promoted, right? You were a good nurse, you're a good charge nurse, you're a good preceptor, you're a good manager. And I don't necessarily buy into that. I want, first and foremost, I want people who want to be a leader and who recognize they've got opportunities to improve and want to improve those. And they're not just in this role because, well, this is the next step, right? And, well, I was a great charge nurse, so I'm going to be a good manager. And then open to feedback. I think we all have blind spots in our career. And I think really good leaders can take a step back and say, here's what I own in this, and here's where I see my opportunities.
I resonate a lot with what you mentioned. In my previous role, I worked a lot with our charge nurse group in supporting them. We get so enamored or get caught up with the technical skills, right? As you mentioned earlier, being good clinically, but it's like the case of a very good player, but a bad coach. Not, may not be a bad coach, but these are two different levels of skill set, right? That some call it soft skills. And I've even invited speakers in helping facilitate crucial conversations. How do you give feedback, whether reinforcing positive behavior or when you're dealing with others who are not stepping up the plate, so to speak? And I found that really valuable because these are the things frontline leaders are not being taught. Mm-hmm. If anything, especially the ER, we are direct, we are straight to the point. And that's why perhaps largely the ER does not get along so much with the inpatient unit because A, operations are different, personalities are different. And I found that it was really essential to develop these soft skills to be able to have a sense of camaraderie and a sense of community for, hey, we're one goal, patient care, one goal, and being able to have those tough conversations in a respectful and professional way. And the difference and challenge there was either not enough resource or not enough time because we're so busy with patient care.
I used a term years ago. Somebody had come to me and said, you know, I have to have this conversation and I'm not very good with confrontation. And I said, well, let's switch it. It's not confrontation, it's carefrontation. So you're going to carefully have a conversation about here's your observations, here's your perception. And there's always three sides to everything, your side, my side, and the right side. And so it's just working through that and understanding where they're coming from. And I think you're so right. We actually, in my meetings with all the nursing deans, we're talking about the new grads and what we're seeing and the lack of the soft skills, the lack of resiliency. And how do we address that? And I said, we're learning from a generation that mostly communicates via a phone, right? Or via some email or telephone text mostly. We're also in pediatrics, we are dealing with parents that communicate that way. And correct. So now you've got you have kind of a meeting of the minds, if you will, but no one can have a face-to-face, eye-to-eye conversation and feel comfortable and confident with it without some type of tools. And it's interesting because when I talk with them, we're all kind of in this same conundrum. Well, what are the tools? What does it mean to help people have those softer skills? And we've talked about the use of simulation and how do we use that to help folks? And sometimes I know we use actors, but I feel like, gosh, what would be the right answer to get somebody prepared, not only for the softer skills and kind of the emotional intelligence part of it, but the resilience through the pandemic when many organizations weren't accepting students. I think we were doing what we thought was the right thing. And I'm certainly not here to say that was the wrong thing, but obviously there's unintended consequences to that. And folks starting their nursing career with very little, if any, patient contact. And I had very unfortunate the end of last year, we had three nurses in different areas come to us and say, I don't think this is right for me. And these are new nurses. Mm-hmm. And they're like, I don't know whether I can go on in this environment. And it's based on understanding the reality of nursing and realizing that I'm going to have to deal with the first time a child is taken away from their parents, or the first time I see a child abuse case. And how do we prepare folks for that? Because we talk about it. Didactically, we learn about those types of situations. But how do I, as a new nurse, how do I prepare myself emotionally and mentally for that reality?
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. As you mentioned that, I recalled a lot of times where I worked a lot with our social services at work with critical incident debriefs on obviously critical situations like the most immediate and then 72 hours after. That is not my area of expertise at all. That's why I was so glad to be able to seek help for my team. But for me, historically, I've never seen so much value to that to my team before than obviously during this COVID thing, because, or even outside of that, even just the critical events, because our nurses, the workforce is very fragile right now and they need all the support they can get. And I've seen the benefits of being able to do these crucial debriefs or critical debriefs with mental health experts that's already in the hospital as a resource to be able to help nurses debrief, get it all out, and not carry the guilt if someone passes away or whatever, and there's that moral injury, which I thought was very helpful for our nurses. So yeah, thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely mandatory at this point in where we are in healthcare. And I've worked in organizations that use the chaplain, and we would create a very calming environment and nurses could come and go in a specific room or area and be able to talk to someone about, and it wasn't therapy, but it was just saying, we've had three deaths in the ICU this week, and I'm feeling very bummed about it. I mean, it was just an open dialogue. And sometimes that's the best medicine, is saying it out loud, admitting that this is hard for you, regardless of how long you've been in nursing, and understanding that there are others that are feeling that same way. And as you pointed out, building that camaraderie that I'm not in this alone.
What do you think is the most important role of the nurse leader in retaining our teams?
Oh, gosh. I don't know that there's one answer, but I think first and foremost, I think they need to be good listeners. We need to listen to what our staff are saying. That doesn't mean they have to have all the answers. And I also think that's a little difficult for younger leaders to admit, I don't have all the answers. I say it all the time. I mean, I will say, look, guys, I think we can come up with some ideas, but I don't have all the answers. So I think being able to listen, being supportive, and again, that doesn't mean you agree and you give them everything they want, but being supportive of their situation and understanding. And I've heard folks say, well, we need to be sympathetic or empathetic. I think sometimes we get caught up in feeling like we need to be that. And that leads us as leaders to say, well, let's just whatever they need, we give it to them. And that may not really be factual. It may be difficult to operationalize if they have a lot of needs. So I like to say understanding. So understanding of the situation. And so I think when you have all of those, it really speaks to the mental well-being of nurses. If someone's listening to them, if they feel like they have a voice and their resilience. And it really, to me, I think leadership is now leaning much heavier to the softer skills side of things, the environment we're in versus you got to know how to do your budget and you have to know your monthly operation reports. Obviously, all of those things are important, but I think for where we are with nursing, and let's be honest, it's not just nursing, it's our respiratory therapists and our social workers, it's everyone. We need to be more cognizant of the softer skills that are needed to help lead our teams through this so that they stay and they're more resilient.
Mm-hmm. From a operations or, if you may, a financial perspective, right now we have a lot of nurses leaving for travel assignments. Right. I think the other day I checked, there was an average of 4,000 in a week for a travel assignment. And I can't help but think, how sustainable is this for organizations? Obviously, during this time, each organization have their own financial challenges with reimbursement, and et cetera. How do you think this is sustainable for organizations who are not even part of a system to continue paying premium for basic operations? And even some hospitals have closed because of the negative impact, financial impact of having to pay premium for running operations during this time.
Well, so that's an interesting question, Miles. And I've actually had to answer this question probably a half a dozen times over the past month. I recently spoke at one of the country clubs here in Phoenix, and it was to this wonderful, wonderful group of grandmother volunteers that go all over Phoenix volunteering for different nonprofit organizations. And the question came up about the nursing shortage and staffing crisis. And when I started talking about travelers, one of the ladies was just so excited when I said nurses are asking for upwards of $240, $250 an hour. And she was like so excited. And she said, oh my gosh, it's about time nurses are getting paid what they should be paid. And I said, I know this is going to sound odd from a CNO, but I take a step back and think about the impact, just as you talked about, on our small rural hospitals. I come from a very, very small rural place in Pennsylvania. And I know that any acute situation, my grandfather had a heart issue. And so we would have to go 40 minutes to the hospital. So if he was in acute distress, it was a 40-minute drive. And I think about, what happens if that hospital closes? What happens to that community and the surrounding communities? And then it's an hour and a half to the next community that has a hospital, which is also a small rural hospital. So how long will that rural hospital stay? What is it going to take financially to break them when suddenly care is hours and hours away? And if you are from a small rural area or know anybody, you have to think about the unintended consequences of what's happening right now. And then to think about even greater consequences of those folks waiting a lot longer to get preventative care. And when they do come to us, what will be the state of their health? So it's really, I got to tell you, incredibly frightening to me. And I'm not here to say that nurses should not be compensated appropriately for the work and the contribution that we do every single day for not only the patients and families in our four walls, but for our communities. But I do think we all should be taking a step back and thinking about the bigger picture here.
I totally agree. Totally agree. I couldn't help but think about that because there is always an impact to everything that we spend, right? Because at the end of the day, too, we need to make sure that we sustain the mission of organizations, which is to deliver healthcare in our communities. What advice do you have for individuals considering a career in senior nursing leadership or being a nurse executive?
Well, I think if you're thinking about going into nursing, I applaud you for sure. I mean, it's an absolutely phenomenal profession, which I'm proud to be a part of the generation that transitioned it from a job to a profession. And I take that very, very seriously. If you're not aware, it's for the 20th consecutive year, nursing has been voted the most trusted profession. So I think that going into it, you need to realize you're going into an incredible profession. I also would say, make sure you seek out the reality of what you're going to do and what you're going to experience. It is not Grey's Anatomy or Chicago or, you know, it's, I appreciate that those TV shows give some inspiration to medicine. And someone just asked me about that. I said, well, there might be a little part of it that's true, the drama that goes on and those kind of things. But to consider what the reality is, and would encourage folks that are considering it to reach out to someone that is a nurse and talk with them and get some advice from a frontline nurse. For leadership, you know, I think we talked a little bit about ensuring that you have the tools in your toolbox and don't be afraid to ask for them if you don't. So if you've never had to have a carefrontational conversation with someone, don't try to be a hero about it, right? Ask someone for the tools to do it so that one, both parties walk away feeling somewhat positive about the conversation. I tell people, as much control as you can give to the person that you're having the conversation with, the better outcome, the less defensive they become. So don't be afraid to ask, and not just for your tools, but don't be afraid to ask. I think nurses in general are doers. We fly by the seat of our pants. We'll get it done regardless of what it is. But in these scenarios, as leaders, asking for as much guidance and as many tools as you have. And then for nurse executives, gosh, Miles, if you know someone who's interested in going into this, I'd love to have a one-on-one with them. But I think I would be realistic with them and say, this is tough work. The work doesn't end at 5 o'clock. And I would tell that to any nurse leader, but you do have to find your disconnect button, and you've got to ensure that you're investing in yourself throughout the journey so that you don't become burnout and decide that this isn't for you. And I think the other advice I'd give is, don't underestimate the impact of the business side of things. Try to have as many business savvy tools in your toolbox as much as possible, because you'll need them. Even in making what we think is straightforward clinical decisions, there's a lot of business aspect to the decisions and the conversations that we have.
Totally agree. Thank you for sharing that. Is there, by the way, from a nurse leadership training, and a lot of organizations have their own homegrown nurse leadership training and such. There's professional organizations offering like the leader within in like financial acumen, as you had mentioned, for non-financial folks. Is there any recommendation that you have for those who are aspiring to be nurse leaders or senior nurse executives in as far as supplementing their training to be successful in their roles as they face the challenges in healthcare?
So years and years ago, someone had given me a book, Finance for the Nurse Manager. I don't even know if they even print that book anymore. Do people read real books anymore? It's probably online somewhere. But I think if you're really new to it, finding something that's basic finances, we're actually putting together an internal program here for our clinical supervisors. And it's just kind of part of a needs assessment and the information that I've gathered since I've been here, but understanding very basic things, and it's almost building blocks. It's kind of like math, right? You got to learn how to add before you can divide, et cetera, et cetera. So understanding the very foundation of nursing finance around productivity and worked hours per unit of service, and what's the difference between that and the paid hours per unit of service. And again, I think there's some online things. AONL has some opportunities, but I would use ANCC. I think there's multiple organizations that have some very basic finance for new nurse managers. I would encourage everyone, even if you think you got the business acumen down, to take the time and invest in creating wider understanding of the finance.
Very nice. Thank you for sharing that. What do you wish you have known before choosing this career path as a nurse leader?
You know, I wish I would have known more about the finances. Since we just talked about that, I do wish I would have known more about that. And probably I would have gotten my MBA earlier on in my career. Not that I got it, you know, just yesterday or anything, but I would have probably got it earlier on. I think the other thing, and you know, Miles, this is probably going to sound so simplistic, but I wish I understood that this is so much more than a title, that there's the opportunity to have an impact and to advocate for, again, not just the patients and families in the four walls of the organization, but the community. I wish I had known and understood that. I think as a new leader many, many years ago, decades ago, we sometimes become enamored with titles or, gosh, they must make a lot of money or whatever it is that we become enamored with. But I think really understanding, what does it mean to be in a nurse leadership role? What does it mean to be a CNO in an organization? I wish I would have had the, and maybe it's part of it's my fault that I didn't ask all those right questions. But I think if someone feels like this is somewhere in their journey, I would, again, just like I said, find a bedside nurse to talk to before you go in the career. Find a CNO or find a nurse executive and have a real conversation about what should I be prepared for? What is this really all about? Because it's not just about having a title. There's the responsibility and accountability, I think, is often underestimated. And I will just share with you, it's been underestimated even with colleagues and peers in not CNOs, but you know, in other executive roles within the C-suite. I don't think often they understand the responsibility and accountability of these roles.
Totally agree. Well, this has been a very delightful and insightful conversation. Thank you so much for your time. How can our listeners connect with you?
Well, they can certainly connect with me on LinkedIn, Rhonda Thompson. I also have a Twitter account at @RNExecRhonda. At Phoenix Children's, you can connect with me, Rhonda Thompson, at phoenixchildrens.com, my email address. I am certainly, I feel like, you know, good mentors and good coaching sometimes is hard to find. So I'm open if anyone would like to connect with me and ask other questions. I'm happy to do that.
Awesome. Well, again, thank you for your time. And this is a delight to have you in the show.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me, Miles. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. To view the complete show notes and all the links mentioned in today's episode, visit milesperillaconsulting.com/podcast. And before you go, make sure you follow or subscribe to this podcast so you can receive the latest episodes as soon as they're released. And if you're enjoying the show, please leave a rating and review in Apple Podcasts. Thank you again for joining me. This is your host, Miles Perilla, and you're listening to The Insightful Nurse Leader. I'll see you next time.